I'd call this meeting to order. This is a discussion session, April 28th, 2015. This is for a discussion regarding non-bargain salaries. Dr. Adams, turn it over to you at the time.
All right, thank you. You know, when we discuss employees who are under contract, we do it behind closed doors. We do it in executive session. But when we talk about non-bargaining, we do it in the sunshine. And actually, today I'm coming before you to have a discussion, some recommendations that I would like to bring back to the board. One of my goals this year was in the focus area was employee development and performance vision. And a goal under that was to develop a salary schedule for non-bargaining groups using a model that establishes fair and competitive wages. Those were a goal set at the beginning of the year. And what we said we were going to do as part of that was conduct a salary comparison with other districts, like districts, contiguous districts, have a committee of people to meet and bring recommendations to me, and then do a phased implementation. And you have to use your budget constraints as one of those parameters. Why this issue? The issue of the non-bargaining is we are not competitive in the marketplace. And we're going to talk about a little bit about why and what we recommend. There is also a salary inequity that exists between the people that have been working for us and those who come in as new hires. The non-bargaining employees have been frozen on their step for 7 years, and yet when we hire somebody new, we give them their years of experience, so in many instances they leap over those employees that have been part of the district.
What is the category that we're talking about, people?
The non-bargaining is school administrators, district administrators, confidential managerial, and pro tech. And we'll explain a little bit more about who they are as we go through it. Okay? We are finding that we're having difficulty filling some of these non-bargaining positions because we are no longer competitive. There is evidence, and some staff might give some examples of employees leaving the district for higher salaries elsewhere for jobs that within the organization. And actually, 7 years frozen and then watching other people come in and go over you does create morale issues. So our goal is to show you competitive wages, eliminate the salary inequities, and keep it within the budget. So that's today what we want to talk to you about. Carter is going to move through the details of the plan, and we'll have the recommendation for you at the end, and then certainly open it up for discussion.
Thank you, Dr. Adams. As Mr. Circio so astutely asked, who are we talking about?
Yeah.
We're talking about administrators. We're talking about your assistant superintendents all the way down to your directors in the administrative ranks. These are people who perform leadership roles. These are district-based and school-based instructional leaders. We have professional technical people, and this is just a sampling of the folks that we're talking about. The list is voluminous. On the professional technical, we have people who support all employees, including teachers in the classroom. You got your computer network analysts, your accountants, your payroll managers, etc. And we also have confidential managerial groups. These support all employees, and once again, they are district and school-based. There are about 255 employees when you count up that group together, and they're about 12% of your district's workforce. So we're talking about fairly significant amount of people. However, I think it's important for those new board members who are on the board and the older board members, if I can use that word, the not so new board members.
Come on, Paul.
I'm just warming up. To put things in a little bit of a historical context, how did we end up here? We were talking about the fact that our salaries are not competitive. What caused all of this? So it's important to talk about that from a historical perspective. And the board currently has what we refer to as a salary schedule. It's based on a step model. And prior to 08-09, after a year rolls by and a year of experience goes on, you move up to the next level. It was kind of like an automatic increase, if you will, to match your years of experience. However, during the budgetary crisis of the Great Recession, steps or the movement along that schedule was frozen as part of our budget reduction plan those years. And in addition, I've summarized briefly for you in that table what some of the cuts that non-bargaining staff had to endure, which was, for example, in 2008-09, non-bargaining groups, we eliminated the performance bonus that non-bargaining groups had received over the years prior to 08-09, and also the in-service incentive pay. In 2009-10, as the crisis took further hold and deepened, we also eliminated the six paid holidays, which amounted to about a 2.46% decrease for all the non-bargaining groups. And I inadvertently skipped the year before. We also moved assistant principals down to 11 months. So that created obviously some issues, because we were laying off people, and those of us, the war wounded, who were fortunate enough to be left behind, had to take a 5% cut on top of the salaries, on top of the fact that we had laid off people. So if you had three people in the department and you lost one, now you have two people doing three people's work, kind of thing. So we were doubling up. Now, subsequent to 2011-12, the board did restore the salaries once we came out of the recession to the 2008-09 levels. So that was done. And also, for last year, we also gave a 2.75% increase, but that was across all levels of the steps. So you still had a disparity between the top and the bottom, because all sections of the schedule moved the same amount.
And that was all employees.
That was all employees.
And the other thing I want to mention, you know, we talked about the budget crisis, but you didn't live through it. We cut $34 million out of the budget. It was terrible. And the non-bargaining group is the group that took the 7.5% cut and then ended up staying frozen for 7 years. But it was a devastating few years, because $34 million is a huge amount when you have to go into your budget. So that was what we were facing in those years of 2008 to 2010-11.
And part of the reason for that was the only group we could reach out and touch. You couldn't unilaterally do that to a unionized workforce.
You still had class size you had to meet.
These
you still had.
Did, yeah. It sucked.
So just to give an example of what freezing of step looks like, is you have an employee that has been here for 7 years under this frozen step schedule, and they're currently just making, and this is just an example, $84,000, but someone coming in who is brand new to the district is given all their years of verified experience. And I can speak to that because I do have a position that I recently hired in my department that was recently hired, and that person was able to leapfrog, if you will, over everyone else who was here for the last 7 years. So we are living this today. So I'd like to show you some information that we took from the Florida Department of Education on how this has impacted your instructional leaders. We just want to separate that group for you to kind of see what the impact is. So as you see, my source for my data is the DOE's Division of Accountability Research and Measurement. This is based on 2013-14 Survey 3 data that all districts transmit to the state. And what they give you on the report is the averages. Okay, this is just average salaries. And what we first did was look at districts that have about the same amount of FTE as us. You know, so the theory being, you're the same size, you should have somewhat of a similar organizational structure and compensation package. So when you look at the principal of a high school, for example, and anything that's red like that, we are, and if you were to rank them, we are dead last in terms of the average salary that a high school principal earns. For a principal at a middle school, if you were to rank them, we are number 3 in the slot. At an elementary school, on the next slide, you can see that an elementary school principal in Indian River County, compared to like-sized district, on the average, is ranked number 4, or dead last. Next slide, assistant principal at the high school. You can see, again, ranked to like-sized districts. Again, districts that have about the same amount of FTE as us. We're ranked dead last, and the same goes for an assistant principal at a middle school. I think you kind of see a pattern emerging here. For assistant principal at an elementary school, once again, we are at 61,330, dead last at number 4 in the ranking. Then we also decided that we wanted to take a look at districts that touch us. 2 up, 2 down, Brevard and Volusia to the north, Martin County and St. Lucie to the south. Kind of look at a geographical look at ourselves. Now, I have to make one big caveat here. St. Lucie County has a different, more varied type of compensation structure. They have, for their principals, essentially a base salary, and they add to it what they call complexity factors, such as student enrollment, percentage of low SES students enrolled, extracurricular activities by school, etc. So there are add-ons. They've got longevity supplements. Essentially, that's battle pay, as I like to call it. You know, you've been here long and you've put up with us for these years, so you get a little something extra. So when you look at St. Lucie County, we also have anecdotal evidence that those salaries are actually higher than what you see on the published reports for St. Lucie County.
A lot higher.
Yes.
About the highest.
So, but when you look at it, even from the data that you can see, for Indian River, for a principal at a high school, again, once again, we would rank number 4, or our last in this survey. Principal for a middle school is the same thing, a number 4 in the survey. Principal at an elementary school is number 5 in the survey as well. We are at 79,712. And for an AP at the high school, once again, we are at 69,980, or number 4, which is last. An AP at the middle school is number 3 in the ranking, with Volusia being the lowest. And an AP at an elementary school in Indian River is the lowest compared to contiguous districts, districts that touch our school district. The next slide, if you will, summarizes and gives you the ranking. And I just kind of put in red, if you will, where number 4 is the lowest paid, and number 4 like-sized districts. So if we're not last, we're pretty much next to last. And contiguous districts, you can see if we're not 5th or 4th, we have one slot that we're a little bit competitive, which is the AP at the middle school for contiguous districts. And obviously this has implications for us, as Dr. Adams pointed out, of recruitment and retention of our instructional leaders at our school sites. So we have a recommendation based on the parameters that Dr. Adams identified. We have a recommendation, and we've actually talked a little bit about this actually during the budget cut years. I thought about this, that we want to have what we refer to as an indexed salary, which is $1 value for the salary for that position. What that would do is eliminate the leapfrog effect for people in the step schedule. So if we had a position that was open, we know exactly what exactly that salary would pay. It adds predictability to your budget, because a lot of times we're trying to budget for positions and we have to assume that this person is going to come in and be at the top, so that creates unnecessary allocation of budget. It addresses the inequity between the steps on the existing schedule. And if you look at it, it actually prepares or creates a career path. Because if I'm an assistant principal at an elementary school and I now want to move up, I do have some incentive to move up to be a principal at the elementary school, and likewise for middle and high schools. So we believe that this also provides a competitive wage. When you look at the figures that you see there, they're not number 1, but they're not number 4 or 5 either. That puts us in the middle of the range in terms of the pack. So our recommendation, and these numbers are based on the averages of the counties that actually do an indexing of their salary in the contiguous region. So we have a recommendation today that is to approve the proposed revision to the current salary schedule. This would be a board agenda item that we would bring forward to you for up or down vote. to reflect the fixed salary amount for school-based administrators and assistants, which are your principals and APs, to reflect the proposed adjustments for competitive salaries to the first day of their contracts this year. The approximate cost of the general fund is about $377,128. So what about other non-bargaining groups? We asked, okay, who are these people we're talking about? And we just got through talking about just your instructional leaders. Well, we would also propose to you that we, for this year, that we ask the board to approve a revision to the salary schedules to reflect a 2% across-the-board salary increase for others outside of the group that we have already identified. And the cost of the general fund is about $189,843. Because we are currently doing a study of the professional technical group and aim to do further study next year for other non-bargaining groups. Pretty much a principal is a principal wherever you go in terms of looking at the job duties and responsibilities. Professional technical is a little bit more varied. The titles are different, the responsibilities are different, so we asked an outside company, I think Mr. Fritz is spearheading that, to take a look at the professional technical salaries and establish what they think is based on competitive salaries. So let me give you an example, and I had this in the wrong spot here. We had a principal that retired from Rosewood Elementary. And her salary was $96,018, and we appointed a interim person there. And she came in based on the fact that she was a brand new principal and was placed at the top, at the bottom of the schedule at $76,800. So what that did was create a salary lapse, if you will, between the exiting salary at $96,000 and the incoming salary at $76,800. She's doing the same work as the person who left. But there is a salary difference between what this person exited at and the person coming in. So what that does, for example, it creates a salary lapse in the budget system. And this is something that's not unique. You know, we have people retiring. We have different positions that vacate the district, and we hire on and maybe a lower salary. There's also a time difference. If I retire in August or September, and it takes a while for us to interview and, you know, get somebody on board, then you pick up a little bit of those salary savings as you go through the year. So how do we pay for all of this is my point. We have a salary lapse in the system, about $1 million today. We do know that we will be needing a little bit more money for subs for the rest of the year. We are seeing some activities there. We made that zero. We really need about $200,000 for subs, but we just wanted to look better at zero. The school board has already approved a 2% salary increase for CWA based on their bargaining and so forth. We're proposing the 2% non-bargaining groups other than principals and APs. And then the elimination of the step schedule and the implementation of the indexing system for principals and APs. So the money is there today that we could go ahead, if the board should wish. We would have to bring that back at a board at a board meeting for as an action agenda item and fully disclose and discuss it in the sunshine. So with that, we're ready to take your questions and any.
And I wanted to mention that those that are in the audience today, there is an informal group called CASA that represents all of the non-bargaining. And Mr. Racine and Mrs. Seeley and Mrs. Barker are the officers within that group. So they have joined us today when we've gone over the recommendations with them, that they're there to hear the conversation. So I appreciate their coming. So we're...
Mm-hmm. Any questions at this time? Okay. Ms. Hemchuk?
Thank you. Can you just go back? I would be okay with this if you don't mind. But I do have some questions, so I know this. First of all, the biggest burn and what caused this was that step, that frozen step. But the other thing that for 7 years, that's where we really got caught. But I'm trying to understand the example you used about your department. I bet you could probably, maybe not, but it's possible, have an AP come in and actually make more than a principal based on coming in from another. I don't know that that happens, but and it may have it
could
happen.
Be close.
And that's very hard to have an AP making more than, you know, your subordinate. So that's where these problems, and you have to clean that up. You have to clean that up for morale. You have to clean up for the integrity of our district.
Yeah.
But how do you move forward? If I'm, I mean, I'm just saying that's probably a problem. I have no problem doing this. But what about, did I understand that right? Somebody comes in, if you go to your chart, that mm-hmm. said an existing on page 6, so you have your current employee frozen here, and they're there for 7 years, and then somebody, you're saying when somebody comes in, we're carrying over their experience
from
other
the
districts,
from the outside,
hiring them at a higher rate.
Yes, ma'am.
That's new to
today.
I mean, not with this district, I mean just in government, the one that's very unique. You leave your government agency and you go to another, you might go in as a, but I'm just surprising that you're taking the longevity with you. And I think very quiet.
It's in like positions.
I think it's, I mean, good for all those people that could do that. But I think we very lightly glazed over that benefit package of St. Lucie. I mean, you mentioned it. I'm just saying, bring that out. That's very, I understand. That packet is gold. And so not only are you dealing with an under salary that we have to exist, but you have that package going to, you know, move our people out of our district. So moving forward, if this was approved, how do you, when you're creating that structure, how do you stop? Are you no longer going to give credit for when people come in?
That is correct. That is correct.
That's what you're
This is the money. This is the money for the job.
That's it.
Okay. Perfect.
Like assistant superintendents. We are, like assistant superintendents, we're a flat amount. That's it.
It's been indexed for 15 years.
Some other time we see a cost of living, et cetera,
that's right. I think everybody does. That's right.
Ms. Cross?
And that indexing process is where we pick up the one point, whatever. And our positive variance?
No.
Oh, that's a lapse.
That's a lapse. That's the difference between that is existing in our budget today. That is the buildup, if you will, of people exiting the system and bringing in somebody at a lower salary or time taken to hire. There's various things that build up in your budget as a result of those things.
And I would say in the last few years, we've had a lot of retirees. I mean, you have a kind of a larger group of retirees, and the people that you bring
baby
in
boomers.
For teachers and for others may not have that same experience.
That's not just non-bargaining. That includes bargaining.
That's everybody. That's district-wide.
That's
the whole system.
Teachers have been teaching for 25 years, making up here.
Up the top of the step.
They retire. You hire
somebody.
Bring in a brand-new teacher
down
here. That's the salary.
I have a clarification and a question. So my clarification is on page 6 where you have your step schedule. You're talking about indexing. So that means that there's going to be no step schedule.
Correct.
No step schedule.
Correct.
Okay,
it's gone.
We're getting rid of that. And then my question about this salary lapse, you know, my background is not in business, but my understanding has always been that, you know, a budget is organic. And there's a testament to that every board meeting that we do amendments and we move things around and blah, blah, blah. So it's not set in stone. So I'm trying to understand, when you say that there is a salary lapse, that is a salary lapse that's in the general fund, that is money that is not being spent for salaries because of this situation that you explained. Because it is in the general fund, what I'm hearing is that the priority that staff has for those dollars that could be used for anything, right? Because it's money that's not being used. So, like, let's say I have a budget for the month, and I decide to stop having my Starbucks coffee. I'm gonna save $30, and I can use those $30 to pay for my gym. Right? And so it doesn't mean that I have those $30 to spend necessarily. Just because they weren't used for these salaries doesn't mean that they have to be spent for salaries. Is that correct?
Can I, Carter, I don't want to interrupt you, but I just want to make a clarification. It's not dollars that aren't being spent. It's dollars that are currently being spent. That next year, we're not going to have a static staff. Okay? Well, but it's...
No.
Well, what about the people who are retiring for next budget season?
That creates that, a difference.
That different. That and creates a different
could
lapse.
Could create another lapse, yes. Yeah.
Typically, this has happened since over the years, and it would help us in the past to help pay for the teacher step, you know, when, and things of that nature in the past. And if you think of the school district sort of like a pipeline, you've got the new people coming in, and you have leakages, you have people retiring in the middle of the year, and then at the end you have people exiting. So there is that buildup through the organic system, if you will, that takes place during the year. The lapse is only what we budgeted to spend.
I apologize.
Versus what we actually spend. And just remind the board that this was approved as one of the superintendent's goals. So it's not that we just said, well, we got $1 million, let's do this. This is something that was fully disclosed, discussed with the board, and approved as one of the superintendent's goals.
So I'll continue my question.
Yeah, I apologize.
So this buildup has occurred during this fiscal year.
Yes, ma'am.
And because of the superintendent's goals, you are following your charge to figure out how we can improve the morale and, you know, tackle this budget situation we're in. So, in effect, what I'm hearing is that with those dollars, there's nothing else that's more urgent that we need to spend money on. Because indeed, this is the priority. That's all I'm getting at. Because I think one of the criticisms we hear from people in the community is that we put the adults before the children. And so I think that it's very important to, in this conversation, explain why this allocation of these dollars that can be used for anything needs to be used specifically for this. You are making a good argument. I just think the question needs to be voiced, because that is a question that I know I get when these situations occur. Not to say that it has been unfair that these salaries have been frozen, you know, and so on and so forth. So I just wanted clarification that this is a result of the superintendent's goals, a priority that staff is meeting.
It's a goal that was set at the beginning of the year, understanding that this particular group of employees has really been very patient with you, with us, if you will, and has been frozen at their current salary for 7 years. And that we came out of a crisis. We stabilized the budget. We've been able to move forward with the budget. We've met with all of our employee groups, and we have contracts now. So we're kind of bringing this up now where we feel like it's time to do right by our non-bargaining group. So it is a priority. Yes.
Sure. Let me talk about the soft term, Don.
About what?
The soft term, though.
Okay.
Of losing employees,
yeah,
that come here. Now we have to hire someone else. We have to go through screening and background checks and fingerprinting, only to train somebody or become a training ground, or somebody's an AP, but they come here to be a principal so they can have that on their resume, and then they go to another district. And so the money that we're losing by not treating our employees fairly, we become a training ground. Whether it's, and if we do this with teachers, or we do this with bus drivers, or we do this with administration, we become the training ground for many people. Besides, we have discussed, or I discussed this morning, it is as important for us to value, not devalue, our employees. It is important that our data center, as I said, that's hideous. And if we don't have that data center hardened, and we don't have a button to push. So it is a juggling act, but it can't be the children. It is about the children, but there are tools to teach the children. There's things in effect, and many things are important. And one doesn't work without the other. And if you do not take care of this group who's taken it on the chin for so many years and treated unfairly, you will see movement, and we will incur funds in other ways.
What's your turnover rate in some of these categories, principals, assistant principals?
Retirements and movement, we've had,
to me, movement is more important than the retirement. I mean, like, if we say, well, we're not paying enough money and the principals are moving to St. Lucie County or wherever they get more money, what is that turnover ratio? What number is it? I don't remember a lot of elementary principals leaving. I don't remember a lot of middle school principals leaving for another district.
I don't know a turnover. I know that you've got about a 69% turnover in the last 3 years of new administrators. But, you know, as far as people leaving, I don't have a number for you. And it's not just the principals and assistant principals. It's data clerks. It's payroll managers. It's all people. And Bruce has had some experiences with them.
I can just give you one example. For example, in the programming department, I know we've lost an employee from Martin County. I'll use a specific example. That particular position, programmer analyst, we start at 39.5 and change, and you work your way to 61 something after 20 years. The salary in Martin County is set at 62.5 from day one. So you go to Martin, you start at 62.5, here you're at 39.5, then you're at 30, 40, 41, and after 20 years, you're within that mark. So I know of a particular example where we've lost a programmer, for example.
And I do know, you know, Charlie Moon?
Yeah, that's right.
He played on Chimp. He played on Chimp. Say Chimp.
Tim Tharp.
He works in St. Lucie.
And Tim Tharp works in Martin.
He says he can't afford to come back to Tennessee, so he makes much more there. Simply anecdotal. I don't know. Every time I see him, he complains to me.
When we look at those numbers, there's no differential in terms of cost of living, because I know I've seen that with teacher salaries where people say, well, if you're in New York City, you make $100,000 a year. You're in Indian River County, you make nothing, but you pay a fortune to live in a closet in New York City, and then if you go out to California, you can't even live in the community where you teach because the cost of living is so high. Does that factor into these examples that you are providing? Are we really comparing apples to apples? Mm-hmm. And my second question is with the budget. You know, but these folks just walked out, and we're not going to have any budget anytime soon. So are we preparing for the future in terms of this is going to be a recurring expense, well-deserved as it is? How is that going to impact us moving forward with the uncertainties of unfunded mandates and so on and so forth? So those are my two questions.
I can speak briefly to the first question you asked. The comparisons are with the districts that are in our geographic region. St. Lucie County, the cost of a home in St. Lucie County is pretty similar to here. Martin County might be a little bit higher, because it's close to Palm Beach. But if you look at Brevard or Volusia, it's pretty similar to here. One of the convenient things that we discovered was that the other districts that index also happen to be in our geographic area. And so it is a fairly similar comparison when you look at cost of living. The professional technical salary analysis that we are doing as well, which will be making recommendations for next year's salaries based on that, that also does have a market comparison to it, which does adjust for cost of living. And so that's one of the factors that's involved in that analysis as well.
And I'd also like to point out, we have lost people who would want to be administrators that have gone to other counties because they can make a higher salary. And I think BBE experienced that, had a talented person ready to become an AP and chose to go somewhere else because it was a better offer. So, you know, it's not just the turnover, but it's those people that might have an opportunity to come into the ranks as well.
I think from the disparity standpoint, over time, as that disparity continues to grow, that soft information will be harder to quantify because the opportunity to come here you won't realize because it won't be said. They'll just make other choices. I know, although my salary is indexed, I was mindful of what that was, and it was a consideration as to whether or not, you know, I would accept that. I'm assuming you would have never known if I wouldn't have not accepted that position because it was for salary, because you generally as a candidate don't say, I'm not going to your district because you're not going to pay me enough. You just make other decisions and other, you know, based on the opinion that you have in your mind for your family. You know, we don't maybe all know of the number of opportunities that will come forth with as a result of that, but the recognition, though, that there is a salary disparity and that it has been 7 years, and that when you look at the like counties, you can see that it's not just an idea, but that there is a disparity, is really, for me, is the question as to, going forward, how much of that lost opportunity will I have to retrain when those chances come available and they're looking for a new principal? You know, will people outside of the district consider, you know, the opportunity to come here for the long term if they know salaries are frozen?
This is also anecdotal, but I do know we have spoken, well, we've had openings for principalships. We've spoken with individuals in other counties who are considering coming here. When these are assistant principals who would be moving into a principalship, they make more money in the current assistant principalship than they would in a principalship in Indian River County. And people that we've talked to elected not to apply because they can make more money in their existing position, presumably with a lot less stress. And that's anecdotal. I've talked to a few people in that situation when we've had the limited openings we've had to decide them here. Not saying that's across the board, but we don't know who we missed because a lot of people didn't ever call us or didn't even check that out. They looked at the salary and made that decision. Since I've been here, I've been here 2 years, we haven't had a lot of people move on from our system to go to other places in the school-based administrative ranks. A lot of our principals are fairly new in our system and haven't made that decision. I think we do see a lot more turnover in the professional technical ranks in our system. We have some positions which we just simply can't fill in that group because of the salary levels. It's a more pronounced problem there. But I also think when we, aside from the teacher, the principal is the most essential factor as to whether student achievement occurs in a school. And if we have openings for that and we can't recruit great talent, it puts us in a liability.
Carter, I had a couple things, and I do apologize again. I've walked through this, and I know now I look back and I see it says 2014-15. I read it as 2015-16. I thought we were looking forward, and that's my mistake. But it kind of brings up a point, and I do think we need to do something for our people because it's been a long time, and you know, having lived through all that, it's been tough. We're sitting here at the end of April. Was there any thought to, you know, the year's almost over now, making these changes but making them effective 2015-16? Where I'm getting at is, again, that's what I thought we were mistakenly thought we were discussing. And I'm not saying, I mean, I would support it for, you know, as it is. I would, because I do think it's important that we support these folks. But we do have a salary dump this year. We will have one next year. We have a about $1 million salary clip this year that goes straight into our fund balance. Then we have that available next year, you know, to do other things, to do a little bit extra, and we still have a salary clip again next year in order to fund this. Just a thought. That may make it a little more palatable for any board members who may not wish to do it, maybe. Again, I'm going to support you. A couple other things. Is the indexing of our school-based administration, does it mean anybody's going to have to take a cut?
No.
Not at this point.
There are some people today who have been here a long time and actually would make more than the indexed salary. So what we have done is we call red circle. In other words, they would remain frozen, and then when they leave, their replacement would come in at the lower salary.
Their grandfather.
Their grandfather, that's right.
There aren't many, but there are a few.
I did have one other question. So for everybody else, it's a 2% increase. And some of those folks are lower-end salary folks, or lower-end pay folks.
Yes, sir.
And we
those are the ones you really feel bad for. We need to do something for them. Are does the 2% and this I want to write this question, does that include school board members?
Yes.
I mean, I would suggest that if we well, no, I would suggest that if we move forward with it, you back out any increase for school board members.
That would be.
I'm almost positive that, that okay. we can. That way, we're not voting on something for ourselves.
Yeah. Okay.
Small as it may be.
Yes.
I think I don't think anybody. So I'm not.
Isn't that set in statute?
The school board. Correct me if I'm wrong. The school board can voluntarily reduce their salary. There is a section of legislation that every year we get this list and says, based on your geographical area, this is your salary. You are already below that salary that is published by the legislature. And part of it has to do with, when you go back to the one of the earlier slides, you had voluntarily reduced your salary to show the solidarity with the non-bargaining groups who took the cut at the time. So you're below that published amount. So, yes.
And I did want to mention that in the study that we're doing, it's possible that we're going to come back. Not possible. We will be coming back next year, a new fiscal year for pro-tech. And most likely, we'll be talking about some index salaries at that point as well. So, what we talked about is a phase-in, and. We're still in the process of studying the professional technical. We anticipate that will be brought forward next fiscal year. And so I did want you to know that we talked about a phase-in, and we also agree that we need to look at the confidential managerial. I think Carter calls, what do you call that, the creep?
Salary creep. We do have an instance of someone who was a secretary under the CWA ranks, and she refused to go into the confidential managerial secretarial because she says, well, I've got a protection of the union because I'm a continuous employee. Number two, I make more money because I get, back then was steps and so forth. So right. There was some salary creep over into
so that. We'd like to do some studies or, comparisons with those as well. And then the only other thing I wanted to mention is in our just recent with CWA is we did take it back to the beginning of the year. This year it was retroactive to this year, and I think that would be the right thing to do for these employees as well.
Well, and the only reason I suggest that is number one, you might alleviate some hesitation to go forward, but also that also eliminates the idea of if it was in place for 2015-16, well, there goes that, the whole idea of not being able to advertise or disindex.
Right.
Because anybody new coming in would be kicking in.
Still under the same
exactly.
So. Existing system.
Any further discussion, Ms. Menace?
Yeah, and I just wanted Mr. Morrison to follow up on my question. So there are no budget concerns for you?
You mentioned the budget. The dollars that we have today, we can implement this program and still be within our approved budget that was approved in September. For next year is a more difficult question because obviously the House adjourned sine die today, and that kind of now leans toward a special session in terms of dealing with next year's budget. But the dollars that we have today are we have those approved dollars to do this if the board so desires.
And I think that's where my question comes from. We're fine today, but this is a recurring expense, and that's something you've taught me to always be mindful of. So, that's why I brought it up. And actually, I like Mr. McCain, I was under the impression that this was for 2015-2016. But, it's not.
I could go for it if it were 15-16, but not 14-15 retroactive. I don't like that.
Can I
Ms. Simchak?
So, do you think that the CWA and these other units, because they have the benefit of the union and they have the benefit of being, to go to a bargaining table, can receive a salary increase? That's the first thing. You think that this group should be excluded from their, a fair assessment
that others are getting about waking up in the morning and financially providing for the family as a CWA worker. And the second thing would be the leapfrog and the fact that you could have an assistant principal out, incoming, having more income than a principal is so violating.
It's in effect today, right?
It is in effect today. And then if you wait a whole another year,
the inequity continues.
The inequity continues.
Not 7 years, but 10 to 8 years.
And I also want to remind you, with the CWA, we gave a 2%, but we also gave a one-time bonus. We added 200, so even for the CWA, we've given additional. We retroactively gave a 2% plus put $265,000 aside for bonus. We're asking for 2% for the non-bargaining and indexing the school administrators, not all administrators, school administrators. Yes. Yes.
Aggregate, the CWA group received about 3.6%. Yes. When you include the performance pay and the 2% salary increase.
And my point was proportionately, not what obviously a principal is going to make more than a bus driver, right. But I'm saying proportionately, a CWA worker is going to get your value, here's your worth, this is the percent, but administrators, please wait till next year. That's one aspect. And the second aspect is more than that, a salary increase. I can tell you from years of experience how bad to have that leapfrog, that inequities within your staff. It is a cancer.
It
burns every day. And to protect, to have another potential of another year, I mean, it's just horrible that it had happened. I feel so bad that it had happened, and it happens. But that is such a cancer in a workplace.
It's been difficult. He's just gone through that.
To have an
underling.
That would be with peers together. I'm talking about to have an underling potentially, and I don't know if that happens or where that happens, make more than you as their boss that looks at their time card, that does their evaluation. You know they go home every night and make more than you.
Even if that happens once.
You have the potential. You didn't answer if that happened.
No. What we have right now is, say, someone is the example at Rosewood. We have someone who is coming in at 76.8, who is doing the work of 96,000. That's kind of the point there. I also had a position, my payroll manager, if I may publicly say that, who left because she was here when the cuts took place and her salary was diminished, and she goes, wow, I can make more money elsewhere. But the person coming in was granted full years of experience. So the person who is here was frozen, and the person coming in gets all years of experience. And that is why establishing $1 value for the salary would eliminate that.
The people sitting in the department haven't gotten a raise for 7 years.
Right.
Or hasn't gotten a step for 7 years.
But he just disproved something I said, so I want to make sure I understand. Because you're saying that there is nowhere in this district that an assistant principal in an elementary school, let's say, that came from another district with 7 years doesn't make more than a principal of 1 or 2 years.
You have that card? You have that? I don't know. Can he come to the table?
Well, if he has it,
if he has
just
example,
yes or no.
Sure.
You have that situation.
Not with the assistant principal,
but with another position.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. We also,
Mr. Frost, will get it. I promise.
If you want to give another example, I have a whole list.
I have several professional technical employees who work in my department, and they've been here for quite a bit of time, and they continually process the leapfrogging people. Which talk about demoralizing. I mean, they're entering salaries of people leapfrogging them every day into the computer system, and they see it every single time they bring on a new person in the PropTech group. So I think that certainly does have an emotional factor. And I have an employee who happens to work in one of Bruce's departments who, every time he sees me in the building, and he sees me quite frequently, he comments on this issue about how he's been here a long time and hasn't seen an increase, and many of his colleagues are being paid well more than him. He doesn't feel valued by the organization. You probably know what I'm talking about.
Okay.
And I'm in the same building as this guy, so he sees me all the time. And I mean, I'm the HR guy. I mean, I deal with people who feel like their salaries are inequitable, and I hear that, but it doesn't feel good.
Mr. Frost?
Yes.
Do you want to ask a
question? Can I? Yeah,
sure.
Otherwise, but the school district could have decided to index 6, 5, 4, 3 years ago. This could have been addressed, and it wasn't, right? But it could have. It's now that we're figuring it out. But if this was really a concern, we could have indexed a while back. Yes or no?
Oh, well, I don't know. Financially, could you have done that 3, 4 years ago?
That's
the question.
We're finally coming, seeing light at the end
of the tunnel. We're moving out of that.
And we're able to, I think the whole idea is we're able to finally help the folks who had not had help. And they couldn't, and we couldn't have done it 5 years ago because the money wasn't there.
4 years ago.
4 years ago, the money wasn't there. 3 years ago.
4 years ago, we took it back to the 2008.
Because I know
schedule.
We worked on,
you know,
this.
That was our first step, is to take them back to 2008.
Because we were able to kick those salaries back. Go ahead, Mr. Frost.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
The Leap Park situation is untenable. Granted, it's something that must be addressed, and you know, we can't create a perfect past, but we can create a better future. In real estate and in successful avenues, comparable. It's all about the comps, right? So in looking at these, I did have some questions for Mr. Morrison. You selected Citrus and Martin, yes, being comparable to the based on our
FTE
and
yes.
Size.
Yes,
however, sir. I would suspect that their tax rolls are a little higher in Citrus, being a community that's bedroom.
Martin, definitely.
Not Citrus.
And I knew Martin, yeah.
Yeah,
I've actually
Martin,
seen the data on Martin.
Citrus
that's important. Correct. So, okay, so what I'm hearing is we're coming, the economy's turned around and we now have a surplus? Is that accurate?
No.
Okay, didn't we just transfer $1.2 million into the general fund from reserves in order to pay our true up for revenue projection shortfall?
Took it from reserves. But
from reserves into general,
the net,
right?
The net effect was about $400,000.
Okay.
Because we had dollars set aside for the shortfall in FTE, but we didn't have the dollars set aside for the impact of recalibration. So it was about $400,000.
Okay, so the recalibration caused us to withdraw some funds from reserves. And I'm not saying that this isn't something we should address. I'm just trying to get my head around the financial realities here. And another thing to consider, comparables, right? In looking at CWA and their retroactive 2% or net 3.6 or whatever the actual result is, these are folks who are making $10, $11, $12 an hour. 2 to 3% as a dollar amount isn't anywhere near $1,077,000, whatever it was. So in going backwards, my concern would be that those aren't apples and oranges, or that they are apples and oranges. We're looking at professional folks who have done the right thing as leaders and voluntarily frozen or at least endured a freeze. And now we're looking for an opportunity to thaw that, and I like the idea of indexing so that we have predictability in our budget. That's always an outstanding thing to have. I just don't know that given a recent, and maybe I just don't understand the finances, maybe the finances are far better than I'm expecting, but I just don't know that it's something that we can, you know, that would be, that is the best decision, you know, as far as how it's received. And I'm unapologetic in my putting kids first, and I know that means keeping staff happy and having the best qualified candidates in place. But if it comes down to a one-to-one initiative or someone getting a bonus,
7%,
that's just my point.
We do have to remember that also included in this is some secretaries making almost next to nothing also.
Okay.
It was
I mean, there are some people who make them very low.
So can we bifurcate those?
It was something that you used as a figure, and just to make sure you saw that correctly, you used this figure,
right.
But this is the figure with that, and that's the CWA. In that was the budget for subs. So if you had mentioned 189 versus, but it's really 189 versus, that's the administration, and that's the CWA. Altogether, that's how it affects.
Okay.
So there is an effect, you're right, you're
right.
Correct, but not the 1 million.
Okay. All right.
And I would like to also say that I would not, and Carter Morrison would not be bringing you this before you if it was something that was going to put us in jeopardy in the budget. He would not be doing this. We feel like we're probably going to end up with between a 7% and 8% fund balance. So we feel like we're still going to be financially stable bringing this forward, and we would never bring anything forward to you as a board, if we thought it was going to put us in any kind of jeopardy with the budget, knowing that we have to go into special session. We understand as much as anybody what those question marks are, but he's a very conservative person in terms of the budget, and we've had a lot of discussions about this and what the best thing to do, and I just can't, to me it's as a person that works with them and all of the people every day, to say it's okay to go one more year is just not right.
Dale?
You said something that just sparked me. When you said it's still going to leave us with a 7 or 8%, you're saying 7 or 8% in the reserve?
Yes, and we have, of course, the total fund balance, which is, as of last year, was about 10%. We're thinking that at this point, the budget, the revenues seem to be hitting their targets. Obviously, the expenditures are a little bit under. So programmed into the budget was a drawdown to about 7%. So we think we'll end up somewhere in the 7% range.
And I say that because I know you and I have talked about this regarding when we went through the teacher's impasse, afterwards. Although the step was removed, their contract issue, and mind you, each percent is roughly $1 million, so we're going to have $7 or $8 million in the reserve. That each percent, now this teacher's, it was removed, but that piece that froze, that remember, if it was under 5%, they weren't even going to ask for a raise, and I'm talking about the IREC. But they wouldn't even ask under 5%. Many years they didn't ask. When it was 6.5, they could have asked, but they didn't. When it got 7, they asked. We went with, no, we want to even take it out, and we had this conversation. But 5% is the board policy. And Dr. Adams just said we will now be left with a 7 or 8% after this is approved, or if this is approved. So financially, I don't know if that helps put anybody into a more comfortable level.
Yeah, and I just want to reiterate, it's not that I don't value all our non-bargaining staff. I feel more comfortable knowing that Mr. Morrison believes that this is not going to be a major... I would have liked to have heard it out of his own mouth. But when I ask the question, I think it's part of that fiscal responsibility, because you're doing a study for another group, and so that means that next year you're going to come before us for another recurring expense that, the right thing to do is pay people what they deserve for the hard work they do, and especially because I know with our principals, because of all of the mandates, you keep adding stuff, do this, and we don't say, do this, but we'll take care of all of this. It's more and more. So it's not that I don't appreciate that, but, the other hat that we wear is making sure that we're fiscally responsible and that we can afford it. And there, I do have a sense of, there's some uncertainty in terms of our budget, in terms of what we're going to see as a result of all this legislative action. And that's where my concern is, but it's not that I don't believe for a moment that this is not, this is the right thing to do. So I'm feeling comfortable, I can support it because our CFO says that it's not going to be too much of a problem, but I'm still worried about the unknown. You know, 7% is nothing if we get some midterm cut and something, and we don't know. And I think that's why I've always appreciated Mr. Morrison being conservative, because it's allowed us to have this reserve, and we've been little by little, you know, tapping into it. And that's where my concern is, that there's a lot of unknown, and we're not as safe, I think, as we think we are. But
Mr. Cross?
Yeah, and please know that this in no way speaks to your value or the value of those being proposed. I would love to own a portion, but I can't swing the price tag. So I just want to make sure that we can candidly afford this. And I have no idea how it works if they don't pass a budget. Does that mean we have 7% to carry us through if there's no budget and no funding?
So I think he's going to try and reinforce that, you know, what we can do is we don't have to pass it today, but we can wait and see, you know, what happens.
So, okay.
If that is your greatest concern, that, you know, there is not going to be any money for next year, that the state's not going to fund public education next year. So if we have that worry,
that they force through 1552 is on there for Thursday, and that includes sharing
Thursday.
Yes. It's on the calendar for Thursday. So we may be sharing
capital.
That's but right. I mean, I guess operating
that's
capital.
Different.
Buckets,
yeah.
But still, the idea is, you know, we have all these unknowns right now.
So we can respect that.
What I've just had a conversation with Dr. Adams on the sidebar was that during the month of May, towards the end, we have a preliminary budget workshop scheduled. And at that point, I'm able to get a better sense, because we just kind of have one more month to go. We're in the bottom of the ninth, so to speak. We kind of know. We have some indications of what our fund balance would look like at that point. And we still have time for the board to make a decision and do the retroactive if the board should decide to do this year. For next year, the only, and I clarified this with Vern and some other folks, the only unfunded mandate, quote unquote, at this point would be the lowest 300 school. There was a bill put forward to say that you're still, if you, even after a year of exiting the lowest 300, you still have to provide one more year in the summer school.
For level one and level two.
Other than that, I've scanned most of the bills and looked at the horizon. We don't see any unfunded mandates, but you never know. It may be a last-minute thing. So that, at this point, is there's nothing out there in terms of any more unfunded apart from that one. I think closer to May will give us a better indication if you're kind of uncertain at this point of what the fund balance is going to look like. In May, we get a better feel because we basically cut off the schools in May from issuing any more purchase orders, and we start the process of kind of winding down. So we will have a better projection for you at that time. So if that's acceptable, then we can come back, and we'll give the board another opportunity to kind of see.
When does special session usually start?
It'll be mid-June.
Mid-June, but that would be for the next fiscal year.
Yeah, but we'll know what we have again by mid-May.
And the reason why I say 7%, again, just to reiterate that we did have a drawdown that was programmed in the budget.
Right.
So that's based on spending certain dollars for salaries and et cetera, and we did not meet that mark in terms of our expenditure. So we are within, if you were to spend this, then you would still end up at 7%.
Go ahead.
This is a tangential budget. So what's happening with all of these end-of-year exams that we have to give the students that are not the EOCs? Where is that budgeted? Like, where can I look at the budget and know what it's costing us to develop these end-of-course exams for every other class besides the state-mandated ones?
The ELCAs.
Is that just...
What GL like account can she look at?
So I think most of it is in labor. Right. So the teachers are developing the exams, and then
they're working together collaboratively
in teams of teachers to develop the exams. So most of it would be a labor cost as part of their salaries. There are some printing costs and things like that that go along with it. But
you know, just to clarify, that's mainly for elementary at art, music, and PE. And secondary, we're using the semester exam that they've always had, that we tied it so we weren't doing a separate test and a separate grade. So for the vast majority, they're using whatever semester exam they normally would give.
Yeah, but that's a good question because people might think there's a cost associated with that.
Actually, Erica Donalds did a study looking at the opportunity cost and the actual printing cost and the hours lost teaching. And I'll forward that to, if you haven't already seen it, I'll forward it to the board members.
Please.
I had something else better. Sorry.
Ms. Searson, could we consider, instead of imposing this year, could we consider bonuses? I know in one of the things back there, you did away with the performance bonus. That way we would be secure for this year. We know how much money we got. We could give a bonus to every one of them. Maybe not the total amount that you have down there. But then when you find out what the legislature is going to do, and then we can make a decision about the coming year, or we can go ahead and approve this thing for a future year, but bonus the folks on this year. You got the money.
That would solve only one of the three-legged stool, as I call it. That would solve the constraints of the budget, but it would not solve employees coming into the district and leapfrogging and earning more money as a result of getting all the years of experience. And it would not also solve the issue of having the competitive wage for this group, which is a starting point, as Dr. Adams talked about. But you could do that. You could, if that's the desire of the board. I mean, again, that's...
It would not solve that issue this year. The retroactive thing is what I'm not in favor of. But if you did the bonus system, and all those folks got bonuses, based on some formula you all put together, and then you begin this program next year, then you get it right. This is a planning board, I would think. We're supposed to be planning for the next year when we come in the middle year or three quarters of the way through the year and bring up a plan like this. I don't really like that.
Okay.
But
the reason they have to do it this way is they have no bargaining unit. We have been forced, handcuffed, and hog-tied, and we have to deal with bargaining units. They don't have a voice. That's why they keep getting pushed off as the suggested method. To equalize, more than the money, but to equalize the playing field is so important that we have to take, we're going to have to do it. And like I said, they don't have the voice. They don't have the voice, and nothing forcing us to do it. They have to address, you know, a fair labor type practice. That's what I'm saying. More than the money, the fair labor practice. That's probably why it's easy to say, let's wait till next year. Not easy, but I know why you're doing it. I know the thought process to keep us safe financially, but maybe you're not as boisterous as I'd like you to hear that we're safe, safe, and safe, and safe, but waiting till the mid-May is fine. But I do feel that that's how we got in this, because they took it on the chin. They took it on the chin. It'll have to be addressed, and now we're coming out of the economic, and I think Matt started to say that, and that this is the time that it has to be done, and we're doing with other employees that they're bargaining. Even with their units, their unions, you can't reach a which you can say, we're lucky we're in this year. When I came on, we were like 2 years behind. That's what happens with all these union groups. Now, this group is 7 years behind. So the insanity can go on another year, sure, and then next year we'll find another, you know, if not really done. So I just, like I said, the inequity is what's so bad about it, and that's what I wrote the first thing when I said, biggest burn, that 7 years, that's the biggest burn, and that's how we got into this. And it wasn't, should have been spotted, you're right, should have been spotted. And then there's Band-Aids, and we could put a Band-Aid and do a bonus and do another year. But I would suggest if we can, that's, you know, the way I really feel.
When does 15-16 start?
July 1.
We're not talking about another year.
I don't think that it's right.
you're talking about another lost year of an increase for this group. And again, if the concern right now is the unknown, then if you're comfortable giving it some additional time and then coming back to you, or, you know, we're glad to do that. Because
well, I would say by the middle of May, we should have an idea, because we send out a memorandum to the schools and basically say, you know, we're cutting off the purchase order process, we're starting to wind down the school year, so at that point we kind of look and see what's encumbered. And
but I would want to know that we're waiting, because you feel like that's really the important issue here. Is this something that's affordable and that's not going to put us in any kind of jeopardy for next year because it's an unknown? But I would want to know that today, that we're not waiting, because, you know, so we're glad, we're certainly going to look at that.
Anything else?
So I'm hearing that...
I, having lived through this, I'm certainly excited about getting those people somewhat back to where we can't make up all those years, but we can at least get them make good with them right now. You know, whether we, I think the big decision is, you know, if we want to make it retroactive 14-15, that's fine.
We've got to be able to afford it.
If you've got consensus,
we've
got
to be able to afford it. That's what you're saying.
Right. In May.
Okay. It's in 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, we will have.
I'll have a better sense of the ending fund balance at that point, because the cutoff would have been put in place, and then we can kind of examine our budget, see what, you know, our revenues and expenditures, and kind of do a projection for the end of the year to see where we're going to end up within reason.
All right. Okay. We're going to have to wrap this up. We've got a board meeting coming in about half an hour.
Oh my gosh.
All right, no further business. We're still standing.
Don't we have a lot of those files?